morning, Your Honors. This is another immigration asylum case. What different? Basically, this is set in Bosnia-Herzegovina. My client was a Serbian ethnic and an ethnic Serb, and in 1992 he was impressed into a Serbian militia to fight in the conflict over there. He refused to fight because he did not agree with the Serbian cause against the Muslims and Croats. He was forced to do menial labor under the military, that was what he was done there. Now, the reason that this connects is that in 2002, there had been a truce, there had been a peace going on, but there were certainly many areas of antagonism between the three groups. My client opened a nightclub in Prijedor, which is a town in Bosnia, and he, while not harboring these kind of opinions against the Croats and Muslims, he allowed them all to come to his nightclub and to be customers there and to be free, freely associate there. He was persecuted then for this by a gentleman who was a strong ethnic Serb who had actually been his commander in the military 10 years before. He was persecuted by being arrested, or not arrested officially, but by being captured, by being beaten, burned with cigarettes, and held for a period of time. His wife and his life was threatened, and the persecutor said, "Your wife's unborn child will never be born." Now, one of the issues in this case, and where the judge missed the boat, was that there are different facts, and the judge cherry-picked certain facts and ignored others. The facts that the judge picked were that the persecutor also demanded and got and extorted money from my client at the same time that he was persecuting him for these ethnic beliefs, which were demonstrated by his action. There's a doctrine called hazardous neutrality, in which by being neutral in a situation which is as hot as that one is, your political opinion is imputed. And in fact, while torturing him, the persecutor said several things. First, I should have killed you when you wouldn't serve in the military under me in 92. And secondly, you are a Serbian traitor, and called him a traitor to the Serbian cause. Now, where the judge erred was in ignoring those facts in his decision. He simply characterized the case as one of an extortion and said that this man was just after my client's money and also the nightclub itself. But on one occasion, armed men under the control of the persecutor stormed the nightclub, destroyed it, threatened people, and my client went to the police chief in that town of Prijedor to complain, and the police chief said, "Well, the person who did this, his father is the mayor, and I cannot do anything about it." And so it falls under the doctrine that even though this was a private individual who persecuted him, the government was unwilling and unable to protect him. Now, so that's the basis of our case, and the government has argued, and I'll anticipate this, that the persecutor is no longer, or was in fact arrested. My client did complain to S4, which was the force in charge there, and he was arrested and put in jail. However, he was allowed to walk out of the jail. He is now free. He has sent emissaries to my client, who was hiding in Serbia just before he came to the U.S., emissaries saying, "I am still going to get you if you ever come back here." And in fact, and so therefore, we feel that there was past persecution, and that established a rebuttable presumption of future persecution, which we can see now through these messages is a real one, and that the government did not rebut that. The judge, in fact, shifted that burden back to my client of proving there would not be future persecution. I should also add one more factor. The judge did find my client credible, and so therefore all of the testimony, even that the judge picked and that the judge did not pick, is considered credible by the judge. Any questions?
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Hagen. Ms. Brady?
Good morning. May it please the Court, I'm Sue L. Brady for the Acting Attorney General. This case is before you after petitioner's asylum claim has been denied at three administrative levels. And it has been denied because petitioner has wholly failed to satisfy the legal standards that comprise the relief of asylum. He has argued that the facts of his extortion and so forth constitute persecution, but he did not mention that the person who was extorting petitioner and who caused him to be beat up one time in a hotel was in fact an organized crime figure. And he has not alleged that the government either of Republika Srpska or of Bosnia-Herzegovina itself were persecuting him.
Well, now, the IJ found him credible, as we know. And there's a colloquy between the immigration judge and Mr. Thomas at page 14 of Mr. Thomas's brief, in which Mr. Thomas says, "Later on, I found out that there was a plan to send the police and ruin my reputation and enable me to continue my very good business." Well, of course, his English didn't make sense at the end there, but two things. He's found credibly. And secondly, since when are the police not government actors? They're government actors.
If I could take first that colloquy, Your Honors, in the transcript, it's pages 116 through 117 of the administrative record. The immigration judge did ask him how or why he thought the government was behind the mistreatment he was receiving. And his answer was, simply that everyone in the area knew that he was tolerant of other minorities. That is not a statement of fact of how he found out or why he thought the government was involved. As for the police he contacted in Prijedor itself, Prijedor is a city, as we know, and there is no denying that the police superintendent, it was a failure of his function. He felt that he could do nothing in the face of the organized crime figure who controlled Prijedor. The bottom line, though, is that petitioner did then follow up and make a complaint to the UN security force that was still in Bosnia-Herzegovina after the Dayton Accords. That group, with the security police of the country, then continued investigating and eventually arrested and broke up the organized crime group, which was headed by Sasa Milosevic's father. The importance of that is that the proper reference for whether the government was willing or able to control the organized crime group is the government of the country. And we submit there that they did follow through. They charged 18 people, and the ringleader was imprisoned for 9 years as a result of the charges of organized crime.
But then walked out.
No, he did not. He's in prison. The individual who was bothering petitioner in Prijedor, Sasa Milosevic, he was also charged, but he became a fugitive. But the fact that he went in hiding does not mean that the government was unwilling or unable to control the organized crime units that were harming petitioner in Prijedor.
See, let me explain my problem with all of this. In the brief, the government has blamed Thomas's difficulties on extortion and threats. Look, he's beaten. He has cigarettes extinguished on him. He's threatened by a criminal ring that's aided by corrupt individual police officers. My view is that police officers are government actors, and you have conceded that the criminal ring was aided by corrupt officers. So surely the government isn't saying that if officers are corrupt, they suddenly aren't government actors.
No, and I believe our statement was in the context of petitioner testifying that in May 2002, I believe he said 13 mass policemen broke into his club and started searching patrons and so forth. They were government officials, but again, I point to you that for us purposes of asylum, it is his country of origin that is the definer in terms of whether the government was unwilling or unable to protect him. However, the other salient point here is that he has not established a nexus between the persecution he alleges, the mistreatment he alleges, and a covered ground. And as we know, asylum is not available to all comers for any purpose whatsoever. It has to be that you are being persecuted on the basis of one of the five grounds, which in his case he claimed to be political opinion. One reason that that does not work here is that even assuming that Milosevic imputed some ethnic political opinion to petitioner, whatever Milosevic thought or believed or didn't believe is irrelevant. He would have to prove that the government was mistreating him on account of one of the covered grounds, such as his political opinion.
Well, it seems to me, you know, the government is saying that the persecution is not related to a protected ground. Now, even if he doesn't see himself as a political person, it's clear that his persecutors did. When they beat him and threatened him, they called him a Serbian traitor. They derided him for allowing Croats and Muslims into his club. They told him that they were going to kill him, like all the other traitors who were on good terms with Muslims and Croats. So his view of himself and his reasons for allowing all sorts of people into his club were irrelevant. His persecutors, according to this record, viewed him through an ethnic and political lens when they were harassing him. And it seems to me that that should just be enough.
Your Honor, it isn't precisely for the last word you used, harassment. The definition of persecution does not include mere harassment.
Well, beating and putting if someone beat me and put cigarettes out on me, I don't think I would say to them, stop harassing me.
For the reason of the cases we cite in our brief, Your Honor, this court has held that a single incident of a detention or even detention for 6 days and even some physical harm is not necessarily persecution. But the salient fact still is that that mistreatment was not, he was not subjected to that by the government within the meaning of the asylum law. So again, Milosevic's personal bias or bigotry or whatever is irrelevant, even if he imputed such a belief to petitioner.
We've got a fellow who's subjected to extortion, false arrest, kidnapping, death threats, beatings, being burned with cigarettes, threatening to kill his unborn child. We certainly have become a callous nation.
Well, Your Honor, obviously respondent doesn't accept that characterization, but the fact that...
The IJ said he was credible. You can't get past the credibility finding.
The credibility, and the immigration judge specifically said, I find him credible to the extent that he had a successful nightclub and money was demanded of him as a result of having a successful nightclub. The problem, though, with petitioner's reliance on the credibility finding is that it doesn't mean, therefore, that all of the inferences that petitioner wants to draw from his credible facts are sufficient in this case. He nonetheless had the burden, apart from the credible testimony he gave as to those facts, of putting it within the context of the asylum laws, and he simply didn't. Okay. We've cited cases in our brief that go to whether or not, for example, he expressed a political opinion. He claimed that he did by virtue of making reports first to the police superintendent and then later to the UN force. That did not constitute expressing a public opinion, even within the jurisdiction of this court. He did not make a public declaration of any adverse action by the government. He, in fact, when he reported to the UN group, he asked that his report be kept confidential. And that is the exact opposite of making a public statement of political expression. We cited, for example, I believe it's called Musubelu, a 2006 case, where the individual claimed that he reported up the ranks in the military certain arms running and illegal black market activity. And the court said that that did not constitute public expression of political opinion. And that's really on point here.
Just how much, at this point, what is the government's view of, you know, going public? It's not enough to go to the UN force. It's not enough to go to the police. What do you have to stand, you know, in Bughouse Square and shout it to the world? What do you have to do?
Yes, Your Honor. The immigration judge even cited one of this court's own cases for the proposition that it has to be public, such as a letter to the editor of a newspaper. Giving a soapbox argument, if you want, because it is public expression. Because this court has even discussed that, if the expression wouldn't be protected here in the United States in the First Amendment, why should we expand it for a person seeking asylum here? And so that is why, if it's not public expression, it simply does not come within the political opinion ground for asylum.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Brady. Mr. Hagan, do you have anything further?
Just a couple of points, Your Honor. I would point out I'm agreeing with much of what Judge Rovner has pointed out. Just to reiterate the distinction between government action and government non-action, it is just as much persecution and just as much worthy of asylum as the government is unable or unwilling.
It seems to be a criminal gang. Its primary aims are economic rather than political, and it's been broken up, so.
Well, Your Honor, it's primary, but we again have the question of mixed motives, and he certainly illustrated that his motives, I mean, when he was my client's military officer or commander, this was a Serbian paramilitary force, he certainly said, I should have killed you then. He is making money. We're not denying that he extorted money. We're saying that there was there were two reasons, and two reasons are enough. This court and others have accepted.
He's extorting the money in order to engage in political activity.
No. He had a motion of
cases we've had where, you know, terrorist groups extort and threaten people. Not like that here.
No, we're not claiming that. We're simply saying that that you can have two motives, and both motives don't have to be political. One motive can be totally other. It can be totally personal.
I don't think you're right. If this person hadn't had the nightclub and the money, they wouldn't have bothered him just because of some, you know, because he's nice to non-Serbians or something like that. Once they decide they want his money and he's not cooperating and so on, then they may throw in some other, you know, disagreements they have with him. But that's not the principal motive for their behavior.
Your Honor, I wouldn't have to say it was principal, but it's pointed out that the respondent testified that it was his nightclub they picked on. They didn't pick on any other nightclubs. And that the response.
I don't understand. I mean, this gang may have been collecting protection money from all the nightclubs in the town. We don't know about that.
Well, he does testify and was found credible that they picked him out. That they, in fact, the persecutor gave that motive to him and said, "I'm doing this because you are a traitor to Serbia." And on the side, I'll take some money. That's good. I'll get that. But you are a traitor to Serbia, and you were a traitor in 1992 when I was your commanding officer, and you still are. And we think that that is the stronger motive, although the cases don't say one has to be stronger or the other weaker. It could say that there can be other. Maybe he didn't like the person's name or got into an argument with his brother or something. But the persecution...
Now, what fear would he have if he went back? The gang has been broken up. What was he worried about?
Well, Your Honor, the government explained, there are two Milakoviches. One is Sasha, who is the persecutor.
Is the gang still intact?
No, but Mr. Milakovic is still at large, and Mr. Milakovic has sent...
So he's hiding somewhere. So what's that about?
Well, Your Honor, he has sent an emissary to the present nightclub to threaten my client if he ever comes back.
Hiding. I don't understand how that adds up to persecution.
Your Honor...
How can he be a persecutor?
Well, Your Honor, let's look at it two ways here. One, we believe that we have established past...
Does he have government backing?
This fugitive? Government allowance.
No, he's a fugitive of some sort. Is he backed by the government? Is being protected by the government?
Well, Your Honor, he was allowed to walk out of prison, out of jail by the government after S4 turned him over.
Allowed to? Miss Brady said he's a fugitive. Is he a fugitive or was he released?
He was given, according to the testimony of the respondent, he was given a pass for some frivolous reason, and he walked out and never came back.
Okay, well, that happens all the time.
But my point
here, right?
My point, Your Honor, is even if the persecutor was dead, we still have past persecution.
Now, wait a second. Even if he were dead, you'd still be arguing.
That's maybe putting a little too far, but the persecutor is at large. The persecutor has...
He's a hunted person. What danger does he pose to anyone?
Well, they didn't hunt him, Your Honor, when he went and took an AWOL from the jail. And
how do you know they didn't hunt him?
Well, he has been in a position where he has sent emissaries carrying threats and said, I will get you. I can and I will, and I'm in a position to get you. And the respondent...
So you think he's being protected by the government?
He may be. I guess the characterization we give is he's ignored. He's not paid sufficient attention to by the government, and that's why he is able to do what he can, what he has. In fact,
Thank you very much, Mr. Hagen.